Maryland Athletics is a proud leader in the development of opportunities for female student-athletes. Over the next month, tune into our social media accounts, hear the Turtle Podcast, and more to be inspired by the stories of generations of fierce, fearless women. For details on the Wine on the Hardwood event, or for more information about our Fearless Women initiative, visit umterps.com/fearlesswomen. It's Wednesday, January 15th, 2020, and Keith, we're back for our second episode of our Fearless Women special editions as we roll through this month here of Maryland's Fearless Women campaign. We have two really fantastic interviews in the sports media space. Legendary TV announcer, broadcaster, advocate Bonnie Bernstein has done a little bit of everything, a former Maryland gymnast, and then Molly Dreska, who works in PR for MLS and did PR for Sporting Kansas City, a former Maryland soccer player. Two fantastic interviews, such great energy from both of them.
We've hit the jackpot back-to-back weeks,
yes.
Taylor, it seems like, with Taylor Cummings and Chloe Pavlik getting things started last week, and now two very similar interviews in a sense of the overall theme of the Fearless Women campaign, but different with the path they've taken and the fields that they're involved with right now, but very, very engaging interviews, and it's been fun so far.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked to Bonnie Bernstein about a variety of topics, her breaking into the industry in the 90s, and I think Maryland fans can sort of cover her career just by what she's done related to Maryland, covered the entire national championship run for CBS, has worked for ESPN, has done some cool entrepreneurial things, and has also spoken out in health and wellness and sports and women's issues. She's incredible. And then on the other side, Molly Dreska, more younger in the game, as they say, played for Maryland women's soccer in sort of the late 2000s, the first part of this decade and the early part of the last decade, and has did PR for Sporting Kansas City and now for MLS, and brought some incredible energy and gave us a food recommendation at the end that we will not spoil, but that me and Keith apparently now have to have. We talked to her after about it as well. So let's get to two great interviews, first with Bonnie Bernstein and then with Molly Dreska.
Here the Turtle is presented by Toyota. Toyota helps you get the most out of your drive. Just ask a friend who drives one. Shop buyatoyota.com, Toyota's official website for deals, to find the Toyota that's right for you. Toyota, let's go places.
We're back here on Here the Turtle with former Maryland gymnast, and then I think I can say, Keith, all TV everything, Bonnie Bernstein. Bonnie, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. Go Terps.
Go Terps, absolutely. And at first, just, and I know this is sort of a big overarching question, but reflect a little bit on your journey. You've done so many different things in your career once you've delved into this sort of TV world. When you sort of take a step, I know you're always looking forward, but when you take a look back, how does that sort of feel to have done so many things with so much more to do?
It's extraordinarily fulfilling for me, and I know a lot of folks who might be listening to this are in college and they may be student athletes, but they may not have declared a major. I know a lot of kids who go to school these days where there's so many things that interest them, they haven't quite pinned down what it is that they want to do. For me, it was a little bit different. I sort of decided when I was 12, 13 years old, I wanted to write for Sports Illustrated. I knew I wanted to be a sports journalist. It just so happened that I turned to broadcasting at the University of Maryland because I tested into the J school and I was surveying students and everybody said, oh, you have to take Chet Rhodes' broadcast class. And I was like, okay, I'll take the broadcast class. And that's when I really fell in love with it. I also had the epiphany in my apartment, 24512 Leonardtown, my senior year, watching my little 13-inch black and white television, and everybody listening who's younger is like, what? There were black and white TVs? But yes, I was watching my black and white television, and I was watching one of the local newscasts. And there was somebody on there who was doing a sports report, and the light bulb went off. I said, I can do this. And so as it so relates to Maryland, all of my foundation for my journalism career was built on campus in College Park at that university. And I set goals for myself. My goal was to get to ESPN by the time I was 28 and a network by the time I was in my early 30s. And I was fortunate enough to get hired by ESPN when I was 24. And I'm not sure I was ready for it, but having the chance to work in some local markets, both in Lewis, Delaware and in Salisbury, Maryland, before I went to the networks was great experience. And reflecting back on everything now, it's, to be honest, it's still a little bit surreal, but I'll take it. You're not taking it away from me. It's mine, and I'm embracing it all.
Certainly the 12-inch black and white TV is gone. Leonardtown.
13.
Leonardtown, though, still very much there. Still very much there.
I know. I drove past it. That was the last time I was down there.
You talk about going into some of those local markets. Talk about that first break. You have those goals that you set sitting in the dorm room. What was the first break that showed you, okay, I can actually do this. It's not just a dream for me.
Well, it's important to note, I couldn't get a job. I was waitressing at Bennigan's and Greenbelt. I was sending my tapes out all around. Nobody wanted to hire me. And I finally got a job in radio at a startup country station. It was called Kix 106 at the time. I think it's since changed formats in Lewis, Delaware. But I couldn't get a TV job to save my life. I think I have a rejection letter from Elmira, New York. I stumbled across when I was trying to clean up a few years ago. And a lot of times news directors don't even send rejection letters. So at the time, you're sending a tape off into oblivion, and you just don't know until you realize that you're not going to hear back from them. So, but when I was working at the country radio station, it was really work intensive because I was doing news updates at the top of the hour, sports updates at the bottom of the hour. Technically, my title was news and sports director, which is a startup when you're ripping and reading copy and the newspaper's about four pages long. the news and sports director doesn't, it sounds much grander than it is. But I'd roll out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd come in, and mind you, this is the early 90s, so the technology wasn't nearly as advanced as it was. But I was physically splicing tape, loading it into audio carts into the system, and doing news updates at the top of the hour, sports updates on the bottom of the hour. At 9 o'clock, after I was done between my updates between 6 and 9, I'd hop in our little Kix 106 van and canvass the entire state of Delaware, grabbing news stories and sports stories, and then coming back to the station and doing another newscast, I think at 5 o'clock. And I think when I reflect back on it, what was so valuable is that, no, it wasn't a TV job, but it was a job. And I always say to kids that having a job on your resume is better than having a blank resume. And what you decide to do with the job is totally up to you. And so at that point, I was just glad to get a job, and I decided I was going to make the most of it. So every single update, I started from scratch. I wrote a new update. I used new audio. And what that did was it really and very quickly honed my deadline writing skills. So this job at, you know, a very small market country radio station wound up being invaluable experience. And then I went on to Salisbury, and I was doing news. I was covering the government beat and the cop beat and the court beat. And then I went on to do news and both sports in Reno, Nevada. But that experience at local markets, where a lot of times you're doing what's called one-man banding, and you're writing, producing, physically editing, anchoring or reporting your own stuff, shooting a lot of times, I always recommend to young folks, if you can go that route just to understand and learn all of those different skill sets, the more of a Swiss Army knife you can become in a highly competitive industry, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, I love that. I love that term, Swiss Army knife. And, you know, you go from Kix 106, and I feel like you've worked with every network, every sport imaginable, it seems like, at this point. Was that always the plan for you, just to have the freedom to try different things, move around? Is that what you always kind of wanted to do?
I don't know that I necessarily wanted to do the whole moving wherever the job is, but I knew it was necessary because even though there are so many more platforms in 2020 than there were, you know, back in the 90s when I graduated, the reality is there are so many people who want to do this. The demand will always outweigh supply. And one of the things that really differentiates you is your willingness to do whatever it takes to take the job and not just do the job, but do the job really well.
Obviously, the road for everyone is different, and you've sort of talked on yours, but working in sports as a woman in sports can be kind of tough. You have to break those glass ceilings. I saw on your website that you sort of speak about that in public a little bit. What advice would you give to especially a young woman trying to break into this field that you've had so much success in?
Put that turtle shell to work. We turtles have hard shells and they come in handy in this industry. And I think we've come a long way. The Harvey Weinstein case being blown right open and the whole Me Too movement has put the spotlight on women and created a lot more opportunity for women. And I think it's important for all of us to know that it is competitive, know that you have to have that tough shell and that intestinal fortitude. And now, particularly with social media being omnipresent, you have to be able to tune out the noise. And it is so hard. And I'll tell you guys, you know, I first got on Twitter in 2009. There are days it's still not easy to completely ignore your mentions. Because at the end of the day, not only do we all want to be successful, but I don't care what anybody says, everybody wants to be loved. That is an innate characteristic of human beings that you just can't get rid of no matter how much you deny it. And so you have to be able to look within, look at yourself every day in the mirror before you go to bed and say, did I wake up with the intention of being the best I could be? Did I work as hard as I could? Was I a good team player? Did I produce whatever my tasks were on a daily basis? Did I produce to the best of my ability? Am I a good human? Am I nice to others? And if you can check off that list every single day when you look in your mirror before you go to bed, then that has to be good enough. And I think the other thing is, too, you have to be okay making mistakes. You have to embrace failure as not something that is an indictment on you, but it is a massive and enriching opportunity to grow and learn. And these are a lot of the things that I can articulate now, but I wish I had somebody tell me when I was younger, failure is okay, because I think we all struggle with that. And the pressure that's on us as women in our industry, I think, is heightened relative to men, even though there are way more women in the industry now than there were. We are and always will be held to a different standard, if for no other reason, especially when it comes to football, because people always have the argument, well, you didn't play. Now, mind you, they didn't realize a ton of guys who were covering football didn't play either, but, you know, facts don't necessarily matter in 2020, but it's true. And so I think if you keep all of those things in mind, you keep focused, you're confident in yourself, that you're bringing everything you can to the table, that's all you can ask for yourself, and that needs to be okay.
It's funny you talk about social media, and obviously there's so many bad parts of it, but the good part of it is it gives you a big-time platform to talk about the things you want to.
Obviously,
you're very active on there. How important do you feel like it is to touch on topics that people might not want to really hear about or get involved in? Because it maybe heightens the tension in terms of things like pay equality, like the U.S. Women's National Team. We saw that all summer. You talked about the Me Too movement and things like that. That stuff makes people uncomfortable, but it has to be talked about. How important do you feel like it is to use your platforms to touch on those type of subjects?
Well, it depends. Are you talking about sports or outside of sports?
Let's go sports specifically, considering we're touching on sports right now.
I think that it kind of depends. I'll give you an example because it's one that everybody knows about. Colin Kaepernick. The reason why there is so much sensitivity around that is, A, it deals with matters of heart and country, and military to many, and law enforcement for many, and they're all delicate and in some way, shape, or form politically charged. And so what I do in those cases is I have very strong opinions about lots of things. There are certain waters I delicately wade into. What I find valuable, and I think probably a better and smarter exercise, to be honest, is putting the question out there, acknowledging that it exists, but then taking the temperature of your audience. Number one, it keeps you out of the fray. But number two, it says to your fan base, I genuinely care about what you think. And then you can respond to their responses. So you're responding directly to them. If somebody wants to go through your timeline and say, okay, is she engaging? And engagement is such an important part and barometer of social media and your audience. That gives them a chance to go through and get a little window into how you feel without you blasting it out to your entire audience. Now, that said, I'm not sure when this is going to air, but just yesterday, Antonio Brown, who's been in the news a lot, the former Steelers, Raiders, Patriots receiver, taped himself having an altercation with police and his ex-girlfriend. What I commented on was not so much that in and of itself, but two of his kids were in that video. And I think commenting on something like that that is so relatable and so human and touches the heartstrings in a really positive, impactful way, not positive in his behavior, but something that really resonates with people because so many, well, we were all kids at one time and we all remember environments we grew up in, but a lot of us have kids too. And what I said was, you know, not a massive indictment about him and his crazy behavior, but on the kids. And I just said, I pray for the kids because little kids should never be exposed to that environment. So there are, the bottom line is there are all sorts of ways you can handle things that get served up as conflict and create engagement and emotion on social media. But it, you really have to take your own temperature and see what you can handle and what it is that you want to put out there.
No doubt. And, you know, shifting gears a little bit before the days of social media, I mean, back to your time in College Park, how did your time as a student athlete shape, you know, who you are today and what you do as a professional now?
I, without question, wouldn't be the same person and have the same level of success I have without being a student athlete. And I'm sure every single one of our young men and women on campus can relate to it. It is hard to compete in athletics in any level at a university, whether it's D1, D2, D3, Ivies, it's just hard if school matters to you. And there is only a smattering of guys and gals who are going to go on to play professional sports. And we know that. We see the NCAA commercials all of the time. If being equal parts student and athlete is important to you, the amount of time management you need to have is insane and so applicable in the adult world. If you can manage to juggle both and excel at both, that puts you so ahead of the curve when you go out into the work world and have to get yourself a job and support yourself. But then there are all of the other skills and characteristics that come from being a student athlete, the teamwork that's required, the work ethic that's required, the leadership skills you gain, overcoming failure, which we touched on a little bit earlier, all of these things. And there's myriad research that points to student athletes, particularly athletes who competed at a collegiate level, finding stronger levels of success at the professional level. Because what a lot of us don't even realize when we're in college is that we are cultivating essential skills to thrive as adults. And take all of that. And then for me personally, I had 3 knee surgeries in college. My freshman year, I blew out my knee. I had to have my ACL reconstructed. The doctor basically told me, you're never going to be able to do gymnastics again, which, and I know a lot of athletes have this mindset, you don't tell me that I can't do something, because then I will make it my mission in life to do it just so I can go back and say you were wrong. And that was certainly the case. And at the time, having an ACL reconstruct was totally different than it is now. Like now you go in, sometimes they can do a partial reconstruction through a scope. Whatever the case is, if they open you up, they immediately put you in a sleeve. You're doing range of motion, which mitigates a lot of the atrophy and scar tissue that gets built up. When I got my ACL done, they put me in a daggone straight brace for 2 months. I'm crutching up, McKeldin, like heading toward the mall because the journalism building was to the left on crutches, crutching from there, crutching to north. I had the biggest triceps on campus, but it was exhausting and really, really hard. And so it took several months for the swelling to die down enough to start breaking all of the scar tissue. And there's not a modicum of hyperbole in this. I literally had 5 degrees of range of motion. There was so much scar tissue built up in my knee. And I would go into the training room and Sandy Worth, God bless her, and I think she's still with the university, her eyes would light up every time I walked into the training room and she'd plop me face down on a bench and she would start cranking away on my knee and it was excruciatingly painful. And I think she took out all of her frustrations on life on my knee, which is good for her. And I mean, eventually good for me because I got my knee back. But it was so painful, you guys. And if you can endure that sort of physical pain and rise again, it just makes you a warrior. So there are so many times when I'm going through a difficult period and frustration and life is just relative in general. And so I sort of have this philosophy these days. Whenever something gets kind of twisted, I immediately I go to gratitude first. And if there's physical pain and, doing 14 years of gymnastics, there's lots of physical pain just when you get out of the bed in the morning. But I reflect back on the amount of pain that I work through. When I had my ACL surgery and the 2 subsequent scopes and I came back to compete for the gymnastics team after that. And I'll tell you what, if you can get through that sort of pain, you can get through anything.
Funny you talk about Sandy Worth, someone being honored in this Fearless Women campaign. So a perfect shout out to Sandy.
She's the best.
The Hall of Famer, Sandy Worth.
Oh, she is a total badass woman. I love her.
Now that you're now not a student athlete, you're now just a fan of all of these teams. A great start for your gymnastics team this weekend. Talk about them
them. Oh my gosh. So I follow them on social and the rankings popped up for this week. When the graphic came up that they are ranked number 8 and number 2 in the Big Ten, tears came to my eyes. I'm so proud of them. And so proud of Brett Nelligan, their head coach, who is the son of my coach, Bob Nelligan. So I've literally known Brett since he was 7 years old. And to see how he served first as an assistant and has been now a head coach for 11 years for the Terps. And what he's done, not just to bring the program to higher levels, but how he has marketed, how he has recruited, how he has followed in the footsteps of my coach. His nickname was Duke, my coach Duke, who always placed academics first. Most of our kids are on a roll. We got a bunch of them on the dean's list. We graduate 100% of our student athletes. And it's not just what they're doing during their course of time in competition at Maryland, but he has stayed in touch with all of our gymnasts and they're going on to truly make a difference in the world. We got like engineers and doctors and lawyers and kids going to grad school at MIT and law schools at UVA and Stanford. And all of it starts in the gym. And we are doing, quite frankly, more with less. When you look at the facilities around the Big Ten and the top 50 programs in the country, the quality of our facilities is nowhere near that. And that has never deterred Brett from putting together these amazing teams. And all of his hard work is paying off on this number 8 ranking. We got Ohio State in Columbus last year, and they came to our house and we beat them. And I know they're out for revenge. So I think that will be like a great statement meet for us. But it's just, I take so much pride in the fact that they continue to thrive so, so, so many years after I've graduated. I obviously, that's where my strongest emotional ties are at the university.
Yeah, Brett does an awesome, awesome job and is a great dude and representative of the university. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, you were able to cover really what is arguably the best night in Maryland athletics history the men's basketball national championship. Just reflect back on that and how much that meant to you. And were you trying to keep yourself together the entire time and be impartial? That must have been pretty tough. I mean, I know that's, you know, the journalism creed, you got to stay impartial. When you're about to have the best night in Maryland Athletics history, that's got to be tough.
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm trying to remember now. I think we played UConn in the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. Okay. So you'd need to go back and check this, but I believe there were something like 34 lead changes. And, you know, I'm sitting courtside, and I am, Mark Fratto at the time was working for the university and, in athletics and in sports information, and the poor UConn SID was in between the two. And I felt like I was going to explode, because I really do take pride in being impartial, so much so that I would have fans reach out during that O2 season and be like, it sounds like you're rooting for the other team. And of course, you know, that's such a subjective thing. anytime you hear people who are watching and they're commenting on the broadcast, they're like, oh, the guy's such a homer for the other team or whatever. See, you get that a lot. It was particularly hard during the UConn game. During the national championship, it was, I mean, to be honest, it wasn't the most exciting of games other than the outcome. And at the time, Gary Williams' grandson was just a baby. And his daughter, Kristen, brought the baby over, and Jim Nance and Billy Packer are interviewing him. And I remember having to keep looking up at the ceiling, because I had to keep reminding myself, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. People are watching. It was so emotional, but there's really important context around that. So you got to remember, when I first got to school, it was 2 years after Len Bias died. And my freshman year, Bob Wade got nailed for all of these NCAA violations. Yep. So we had to give a lot of money back to the NCAA. We had a postseason ban. There was a scholarship freeze across the board. And so I affectionately refer to the time I was in school there as the dark days of Maryland basketball. Well, Gary came in our sophomore year, and in the journalism school, for one of our classes, I believe it was J360, we had to pick a beat to cover. So of course I wanted to cover the sports beat. They're like, no, that's not really a beat. So I came up with sports administration, which basically meant accosting Andy Geiger, who at the time was the athletic director, pretty much every week, and, you know, having the chance to interview lots of the coaches and do some meaningful stuff behind that. And I just remember Gary was really nice to me. And I was a kid, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. So being able to cover every single game in the O2 championship, being able to attend practices. I mean, Gary gave me access that nobody had. I got to go to practice. I was able to watch a film session. The lines inside to the team that I was able to access were amazing. And, you know, just being able to see Juan and Lonnie and Wilcox and a couple of these guys afterwards and sort of revel in the old days has always been a blast. But anybody who asks what's the most meaningful game you've ever covered, I will always say without hesitation, Maryland's 2002 basketball championship.
I would imagine it will end up being hard to beat. We'll get you out of here on a little bit of rapid fire. First, your sports hero growing up.
Sports hero growing up. I would have to say it's sort of an obscure probably for a lot of Maryland fans, but I was a huge Wally Backman fan. He was the second baseman for the Mets. I grew up in Jersey, so I was a little unorthodox. Typically it's Giants, Yankees, and Mets, Jets, but our family was Giants, Mets. And I loved the Mets when I was a kid, so I would say Wally Backman, but also Phil Simms when the Giants won the 86 championship Super Bowl, and he was MVP.
So besides Maryland's national championship, which we know is number one, what's your favorite event you've covered?
My first Super Bowl, even though the outcome was terrible for the Giants, it was the 01 Super Bowl, Giants-Ravens down in Tampa. And it was such a dream come true for me to cover my first Super Bowl, even though the Giants got pounded.
Let's say outcome good for a young Keith Snedden and young Taylor Smythe here. We were big Ravens guys. Your favorite sports movie?
The natural. Oh gosh, that's tough. The natural and Remember the Titans.
Yeah. Oh,
Remember the Titans was a great story, but the soundtrack, if you ever want to go running and burn off anger, just listen to the Remember the Titans theme song. It's just like amazing, and you'll run faster than you've ever run.
Person you would like to interview most that you haven't before?
Ooh, that's a good one. I would have to say Vince Lombardi.
That'd be good.
Because obviously he's one of the great coaching patriarchs, and a little before my time, but when you have a Super Bowl trophy named after you, you're probably pretty important.
And then finally, we ask this to everyone, your favorite place to eat in College Park?
It's not there anymore.
That's fine. We can go down that way. Many people have.
Okay, I'll give you one that's not there, but one that is.
Okay.
So Ratzi's Pizza.
Yes.
Used to be my favorite place. Yeah. But I don't know if it's still on the menu. I do know that John Brown is still there. But there used to be a Monte Cristo sandwich at Bentley's.
Wow.
This was before the days where I actually knew calories were a thing. Because there are about 2,000 of them. But dag, it was good. It was really good.
We'll have to go check that out, Keith. Yeah, we'll have to roll over.
Please do. And see if it's on the secret menu. Let me know.
Yes. We will let you know. Bonnie Bernstein, thank you so much. You've done so much in your career and represented the University of Maryland with so much class out there in the world. And we really respect everything you've done. Really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule to talk to us.
You got it, guys. Thank you so much for having me. Go Terps.
Go Terps.
As the University of Maryland celebrates the start of another athletic season, Maryland Athletics is excited to announce the launch of Terps 10,000, our campaign for a goal of 10,000 Terrapin Club members. Individuals who join the Terrapin Club during the campaign and become new members will receive a Maryland Terrapin Club branded flag to proudly fly at your home, office, or tailgate. All current members are eligible to receive a flag by donating an additional $55 to the Terrapin Club. Plant your flag at terps10k.com.
We're back here on Hear the Turtle with former Maryland soccer player and current MLS PR person and done a lot so far, Molly Dreska. Molly, thank you for coming on with us.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
First of all, give the Maryland fans a little quick update on you. Obviously, a very successful soccer player here at Maryland and have done a lot of things in soccer afterwards with Sporting Kansas City, now with MLS. So just give us a quick update on your journey post-Maryland.
I love the question. Quick is usually pretty hard for me, but I'm going to do my best.
That's okay.
At a high level, I did an internship. Then I got a job with Sporting Kansas City for Major League Soccer. And after that, I transitioned to the league itself. But I do like to talk about the nitty-gritty because I think it's important probably for your audience. I moved halfway across the country for an unpaid internship. And that was at the NSCA, which was at the time called the National Soccer Coaches Association of America, the longest acronym ever. So they got smart and they changed it to now it's called the United Soccer Coaches. And so everyone listening might not be familiar with the acronym, but for soccer players, this is the organization that gives All America awards. So since it was unpaid, I also waitress at Carrabba's. And I like to include that because my day looked a little bit like waking up, getting to the NSCA before 8 a.m., working until 4, then going straight to Carrabba's by 4:30, staying until it closed. And then this is my favorite part. A lot of the times I would pay another one of the servers just a few dollars to make my silverware and polish my wine glasses so that I could make the 11:30 game at the indoor facility on the way home. I was pretty broke at the time, but figured out that all of the teams needed extra players for the late game so I could play for free. And so wash, rinse, repeat Monday through Friday, and then Saturdays and Sundays I did the double shifts at Carrabba's. So it was the grind, but I think that's what people who you would talk to about working in sports would tell you, that their experience was probably similar to start out. But then I think the big thing was that the United Soccer Coaches is headquartered in Kansas City. So during the very last week of my internship, we actually did an immersion with all three local professional clubs. So Kansas City Chiefs, go Chiefs, by the way, woo! Kansas City Royals and Sporting KC. So the day we visited Sporting, they were just finishing building their beautiful state-of-the-art soccer-specific stadium. And it was in that moment that I knew it would become a very special place for me.
You worked for 6 years at Sporting Kansas City. You did PR. You did some on-camera stuff as well. What was that experience early in your career trying to sort of figure out what you wanted to do the most in this industry?
I did. I take a step back on this question because I think for every athlete, the transition to a career after hanging up their cleats varies. For me, it was very difficult. I spent 21 years building my relationship with soccer, and in one day, it's just over. Thank you, Georgetown. So I felt a little bit lost, questioned, you know, your self-worth a little bit. You spend your whole life trying to obtain a goal, in my case, a national championship, and we fell short. So I don't know. I think you work hard to accomplish anything. And I really believe that if you work hard, you can accomplish anything. And you'll hear that theme a lot today while we're talking. But it was the first time and actually the only time in my life that I realized there's a small caveat to that concept. There's a shelf life to some goals. I cannot go and win a national championship at the age of 31. So what I can do, though, is help people fall in love with the sport that taught me everything. So when I got to Kansas City, it just kind of clicked for me. I had landed my dream job 6 months after graduating from Maryland. So I found myself in a really unique situation.
And Molly, not only was the club incredibly successful on the field when you were there, but you won 3 MLS PR Team of the Year awards. So first off, congrats on that. But what was the key to creating a culture of success?
This is my favorite question because the answer is actually creating the culture itself. I was really fortunate to work for some of the best coaches, bosses, mentor, call them whatever you want to call them. But at Sporting, who undoubtedly made me who I am today, I'd like to shout out a couple of those people. Peter Vermes. So I don't know how familiar you are with MLS and Sporting Kansas City, but Peter is the manager and sporting director of Sporting KC, and he's also the head coach of the team. So the thing I appreciated most working for Peter is how fair he is. So for example, if I had a interview lined up for Peter, he would like to have a meeting reminder on his calendar. If I sent the reminder and the day came and time for the interview, he would always deliver, always. But if I didn't remember to send one, he just wouldn't do the interview and maybe would pretend we didn't speak about it. But as a former athlete, I loved that. It pushed me to work harder. And it was the bottom line, it was fair. And you might not always get that with a coach in general or a coach at the professional level. So I absolutely loved working for Peter. And then the other most amazing role model for me is Rob Thompson and Robo. Actually, he would cringe if he heard me call him Rob, but Robo has this uncanny way about him, just of making every person in the room feel like they're best friends. And it's amazing. Like, it's not something that I could ever emulate even working for him for as long as I did. But he taught me one of the most important things that I've learned to date, and it's just to be a problem solver and then obviously a team player. So the answer is always, yes, how can I help? And I think that mentality was definitely what won us PR Team of the Year multiple times.
We didn't send you a calendar invite for this interview, so hopefully it's okay that we skirted by without that.
Maybe that's why I missed the first couple.
whether it's doing content creation or PR or doing on camera stuff, I found interesting it's sort of everything in your job has gravitated sort of some part of storytelling, and me and Keith do PR as well, and that's sort of the most interesting part of it is pitching out stories and things like that. What part of telling other people's stories sort of fulfills you as a role outside of the soccer part of it all, which is obviously part of it, but just doing that basic thing?
It is. It's when people ask me what I do for a living, I tend to steer away from saying I work in PR. I like to tell them that I introduce people to the players behind the uniforms. I love sports and I love soccer, but what I love the most are the relationships and the people. And we have so many amazing athletes and coaches in our league, and it's just been incredible to get to share their personalities with all the fans, and it generates more fans.
Molly, you graduated from one of the top business schools in the country, the Robert H. Smith School of Business. You know, how did that academic experience at Maryland help you get where you needed to be today?
Definitely loads. Is Laura Meckley still around College Park?
good
question. Do you guys know the name?
Do not. Familiar.
Okay. She might not be. She was my academic advisor at Maryland. And I distinctly remember sitting in her office trying to decide on a major freshman year. No idea what I wanted to study. Full disclosure, I think my Facebook profile still might say that I majored in Maryland women's soccer.
That's a good major too. I mean, yeah. Come on.
I mean, it's gotten me where I am today, and I'm still working in sports and soccer, so maybe it's not that bad. But I think I was sitting with her and I said, all right, how about business? Because someone said to me that would be a good major. And she explained, well, the business school is very competitive and you have to have a certain GPA to get in. And it was one of the only programs in the college that you needed a certain GPA to get in. Is that still the case?
Oh, yeah, it is the case because I did not get in when I tried my GPA.
I'm so sorry.
Well, you know, it got me here talking to you. So, you know, something worked out.
So she actually said, I don't know if your SAT scores are high enough. So I said, perfect, sign me up. That's what I'm majoring in. And so I think that was the student athlete speaking of me, just wanting to be in the competitive school. So because there was competitive entry, I was like, tell me the GPA. I'll figure it out. I'll get it and I'll get in. And lo and behold, I did work really hard. I got in, and having a business degree has actually been extremely versatile for me and gives me a lot of options now moving forward. But journalism and comms are I've met so many incredible people in this industry now that have majored in journalism or communications. And to be able to write and communicate is so, so important in this field specifically. So if you're interested in getting into PR, it's definitely another good way to go.
Yeah. Keith was able to do comm. I wanted to be a PR major, failed the intro to PR class. So I was like, what thing can I do writing the most? And that was history. So it worked out okay for me eventually. But you are so right. Writing and communication, all that stuff is incredibly, incredibly important. And Molly, obviously the road for everybody is different. You sort of touched on yours a little bit, but especially breaking through as a woman in the sports industry is tough at times. Talk about your own experience breaking through, which you've touched on a little bit already. And what would you tell someone trying to break in?
It's a very good question. And what I don't want to do is discount all of the women that have had so many challenges being a female in the space, or act like the challenges don't exist, because it's all of those women that have paved the path for my generation and future generations to succeed. Growing up, I was fortunate enough to have two working parents my whole life. And even better, they had the exact same job. They were both teachers. And even on top of that, they were both health and phys ed teachers.
Wow.
So from day one, I didn't really see a difference between being a man or a woman in the workforce. And so what I would tell someone trying to break in is just put your head down and work. Find the people in the industry that don't see gender and who see work ethic.
Molly, it was an important year for awareness of media coverage and equality, you know, pay equality issues in women's sports, but especially in soccer with the Women's World Cup, kind of the light that they shined on the issue. What do you think is important for top athletes, both men and women, to speak out about these issues?
I love to see athletes supporting something, and also to support each other. With such massive platforms, it's an incredible way to affect change. But I think what's most important right now for women's soccer, especially, is for people to support the women's league, the NWSL. So PSA, everyone, go get your tickets, go to some games this year. They're incredible. Obviously, I go to a lot. I went to more, obviously, when there was the women's team in Kansas City. Now in New York, it's a little bit of a way to get to the games, but I still go. So make sure everyone's going.
NWSL draft coming up this week, I think.
Woo! Shameless plug. I did that on purpose. Teed you right up.
That's how you do it. Now, you did say that your soccer career ended at Maryland, but you did get back out on the field and play for FC Kansas City. So what was that like to play professional soccer? I'm reading that you played in one game and played 52 minutes, but not everyone can say they played professional sports. What was that experience like for you?
Thank you. It was the definition of, I laugh because it was the definition of living the dream, right? I actually refer to that part of my life as living the dream. I had the best of every world. I had a career I loved, because I don't know if you know, but I was still working for Sporting Kansas City full time. So, and then I got to play soccer every day. So, again, it's that same grind we talked about earlier that maybe only an athlete could be capable of. I was waking up at 4:30, working out and doing fitness from 5:30 to 6:30 or from 5 to 6:30-ish, and then getting to work at 7, then leaving at noon to go to training. And then I would go back to the office from 3 to 10 or so and then repeat. And I know that's a lot of nitty gritty that I probably don't need to get into in an interview like this, but that's like, that was my every single day. But I loved it so much that it just, it was, those were the best days of my life. And then, to, you know, if anybody really wants to know how good at soccer I was, I did play in one game for 52 minutes and I got subbed in and out in the same game.
Oh, wow.
Not great, but you know, I did it.
There's got to be a Molly Dreska movie to be made about that time where you're working professionally in soccer, but also playing professional soccer. There's something there. There's some sort of show or something.
Did you get the jersey? Did you have the jerseys framed?
I don't have it framed. Actually, in my office at MLS, I have my Maryland jersey. Go Terps!
Go Terps! There you go. Okay.
Because that was, you know, that was the big shining star of my soccer career. But I will say that it's, you know, everything, I do believe in things happening, you know, for a reason. And I, after that experience, though, the reason I ended up stopping playing was because I got the opportunity from U.S. Soccer to go work for the women's national team for the World Cup in 2015. So it was actually crazy because I was, again, still working for Sporting Kansas City at the time. So I don't think I thanked enough people early on to giving me all the experiences. But when I was at Sporting, they just, I think they saw the value in experiencing other things. And I've met so many amazing people, both when I was playing with FC Kansas City, but then also when I went to work the World Cup in Canada during 2015, the summer of 2015. And so, you know, when I came back to Sporting, even though I was gone for about 2 months, and again, still working during the day for the women's national team, and then at night for Sporting Kansas City, you know, doing all the things that I could from afar, but I had so many incredible colleagues that stepped up while I was gone with the national team to fill in for some of my daytime duties. But yeah, I was very fortunate.
Going back to your time in College Park, you were on some successful teams. Obviously, you didn't get to the goals you wanted to fully, but you guys accomplished a lot. What about that time shaped your life today? How do those lessons that you take as a student athlete help you in the workforce? And I'm assuming one of them is going to be time management, because it sounds like you were juggling a lot of different times.
I think that's exactly what it is. It's all the adjectives, right? It's like learning how to work hard, time management. Going through the ups and downs though, too, you know, at Maryland, we were really good, but we also lost a lot. My first 3 years, we had, not as good of seasons. And then I had a redshirt year from when I tore my ACL. So my final 2 years were, we did great, but then, we got a really high seed in the tournament and then we lost. So I think the biggest thing I learned, from my time at Maryland was how to handle failure, I guess, which sounds terrible. I want to say we won everything, but I think it's, you know, having a short memory when losing, but same thing. And then same thing with winning, you know, like and appreciating it. I don't think people appreciate the successes enough.
And then finally, what was sort of special about the bonds you created as a student athlete? I mean, that's sort of the friendships people build forever. Do you go back to those? I'm assuming some of those are your closest confidants when things are going wrong. What was that like now, years later after your career's been over?
Nothing bonds two people like running the beep test. I think we all still can hear that noise and panic a little bit. But no, you're right. They're all my best friends still. I've gotten to go back to Maryland many times over the last few years, especially with all the weddings. So yeah.
Oh, we'll get you out of here in a little bit of rapid fire. First, your favorite sports movie.
Rudy, love a good underdog.
Soccer hero growing up.
Oh, soccer hero growing up. Mia Hamm. I had the Goal Girl shirt.
That's not a bad one. Your favorite piece of content or story you've pitched or athlete you've worked with that you will memorable for you as a PR person or content creator?
Ooh, good question. I have to say some of the stuff I did at Sporting Kansas City. We did a Bachelor spoof video, and full disclosure, I had never seen The Bachelor.
Wow.
At the time, but Tanner Tolbert, I guess a character from The Bachelor or The Bachelor in Paradise, was really good friends with one of our players growing up and is from Kansas City. So we brought him in, the coach of Sporting Kansas City, who doesn't typically crack a smile, was also in that video. And it just, it really connected. It connected to the general sports fan. So people outside of soccer were enjoying that one. So, and I think that's an important thing for someone in a position like mine, but then also, sorry, I'm cheating. This is supposed to be rapid fire.
No, go ahead.
We did a Mother's Day video, with the players, and we went and had their wives and kids film some stuff. And then we showed it to them and a few of the guys, family is really important. So, that one made me really happy because a few of the guys, you know, teared up a little bit watching, everything that their kids and their wives and parents had to say. So that one was fun.
Got that emotion out of them. That's always good.
That's right.
Molly, person you would most like to interview or work with?
I want to clarify this by saying interview, because I love Major League Soccer, but I would love to interview Adam Silver.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a very good, one. Very good. Yes. It's very topical as well. And then finally, your favorite place to eat in College Park?
Oh, this is the easiest question. Bagel place. Every time I go to a wedding in Maryland, I have to take a quick stop in College Park just to hit bagel place for the pepperoni pizza bagel. Or an Old Bay bagel, of course.
So what's the ranking? Is the pepperoni pizza number one or is the Old Bay number one?
Shoot. It's just so, it's just like, I honestly, it depends how hungry I am. So I could really just eat both in one sitting. So I can't rank them.
I didn't know they had a pepperoni pizza.
I didn't know
bagel.
That either.
I knew about
the
Old Bay.
Fascinated. To yeah. Try.
Wait, you didn't know they had pizza bagels?
No.
That's a bad job by us, apparently. It's two people that
you guys haven't lived.
Both went here and work here now. That is a really bad job.
I'm just sesame bagel cream cheese. Like I keep it simple, I guess. I need to expand my horizons. Yeah. I don't know.
I can't even understand why anyone would order a sesame bagel.
I'm sticking by it.
You want to talk about a late interview call out, Keith. That was one for you right there. We gotta go get the pepperoni pizza bagel. Molly Dreska, thank you so much, and for giving us that food recommendation. That's big. I love when people give us stuff we have not had around here, Keith. Keep doing what you're doing out there. We really admire all the stuff you're doing and as a former student athlete, and keep it up. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Go Terps! Woo!
Go Terps.
Thanks, Molly.
Back here on Hear the Turtle, and Keith, besides the incredible advice, wisdom, stories that Molly and Bonnie both just gave us, they gave us two food tasks. We have to go to Bentley's to see if there's a Monte Crisco sandwich, which we will do at some point.
And even if it's not on the menu, there may be a secret menu in the, you know, you kind of have to, hey, I need the Monte Crisco, wink, wink, to get that one.
Correct.
Done.
And I think if that's still on the menu, I don't think it's crazy to name that after Bonnie. I think she's
the Bernstein
legitimate enough to name that sandwich after her. So we'll check on that for Bonnie Bernstein. We'll tweet at her from Hear the Turtle. And then Molly Dreska is appalled that we have not had this pepperoni bagel or pizza bagel. And so now we have to try that as well.
And what the listeners won't hear is after we ended the interview, Molly, we were continuing to talk to her, and she was like, well, hold up. So you guys really haven't tried the pizza bagel?
We were messing with
her. She was incensed. She was not happy with me.
No, not happy with you after you said you only have a sesame bagel.
Right.
Which was a tough...
There's nothing wrong with this. What do you mean that's a tough? Sesame bagel is a good order.
Yes, sesame bagel is good.
With cream cheese.
Sesame bagels, but is it as good as this pizza bagel?
We're going to find out.
We're about to find out. So we will also tweet that out in Hear the Turtle to Molly and to the public about our experience with this pizza bagel. So two fantastic food challenges, but that should not overshadow the fact that I think you got some awesome advice and stories and wisdom from two people that are making it big in the sports world and really epitomize what this Fearless Women campaign is all about. As you said, Keith, up at the top, four fantastic interviews so far. If you haven't listened to Chloe Pavlik and Taylor Cummings from last week, they were really sensational talking about their experience in the sports world, and I really think we had great stuff from Bonnie and Molly, and the interviews are just going to continue to get better. We have some special ones coming down the pipe over the next few weeks. But that's enough for this episode of Hear the Turtle. Follow us on all of our social media channels. At Hear the Turtle on Twitter, at Hear the Turtle on Instagram, Sned311 for Keith, who's about to replace a sesame seed bagel with a pizza bagel, Taylor Schmidt10 for me, who's about to replace, I really didn't have a bagel place order consistently, to be totally honest with you.
I guess you do now.
I guess I do now with a pizza bagel. And we will see you next week.
Go Terps.